The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Pubs, hotels and restaurants are getting ready for another summer of outdoor pints and pizzas as permission for drinking on the street of licensed premises is set to be extended by Justice Minister Helen McEntee for another 6 months. Is it good news for all? Well, on the line now is Joan Carthy, Advocacy Manager with the Irish Wheelchair Association, and in studio, Richard Guiney, Chief Executive of Dublin Town. Good morning and welcome to you both. Richard, I know that this has got to be good news for your sector because what was very successful last year will now continue to be so and without charge.
Indeed, Pat, it is welcome news. We obviously had some issues at the beginning of last summer, and I think the change in the regulation really assisted in that.
If we recall what was going on, there were pubs which were selling pints out the side door or whatever, and people were congregating on the streets. All the restaurants were closed, and that gave rise to mob rule in some cases.
We had some. The issue was really differentiating between people who were patrons of a premises and people who had arrived with their tins of beer. And being honest, the people who arrived with the tins of beer were the ones who were being problematic. So the change in the legislation allowed for the sale of alcohol in specified spaces where that was licensed by the local authority, which was something that we had been advocating.
All right. So the idea was, instead of someone nipping into the supermarket buying cheap cans, instead of paying a full price for a pint, for example, from
exactly.
a club. Anyway, that was to be eliminated. A big business success then last summer. But Joan Carthy of the Irish Wheelchair Association. Joan, not such good news for you.
No, unfortunately, Pat. And we don't want to be the people who are given out all the time. We completely understand where the restaurants and pubs are coming from. They need to make their money back. It's hugely important that we find a way to do this, that it serves, I suppose, the businesses and the general public. And people with disabilities are part of the general public.
Can you talk us through the difficulties that this ad hoc arrangement, because a lot of it was ad hocery, maybe going forward we'll have more stable arrangements made, but what kind of difficulties did it give to the people that you represent?
Yeah, it caused huge problems in relation to just trying to get around our cities and towns, whether you have a mobility issue or a visual impairment. There was a lot of clutter on the streets that came from the outside dining, people's handbags or bags, shopping bags left on the ground, and just kind of that encroaching on the space that people need to be able to navigate their way around.
I mean, people,
the street.
I can imagine someone sitting at a table in a designated space, they push their chair back a bit. Or they, go to the loo or whatever, leaving the chair sitting out in the walkway for pedestrians, all of that kind of thing. The clutter, as I say, it was kind of just made up as we went along last year. Do you think it could be done in a more orderly way that would facilitate you?
Absolutely could be. Look, some of our streets are just not made for outdoor dining unless we're able to pedestrianise a lot of our roads within the cities. And in some cases, that might be the only way to go. But in other areas, we really need to have proper planning. You're right in saying that it was done in a very ad hoc way. It was emergency legislation that was put in place to enable the restaurants to open. But as far as the councils are concerned, there wasn't enough. And even with this legislation, there isn't enough consultation with people with disabilities. And even when there is, it's not necessarily taken on board. Mm. And you're right in saying that, that space that's there, it's measured out to the absolute minimum. So when tables and chairs are put out, they're possibly inside the minimum measurements given. But as you say, as soon as somebody sits down, the chair gets moved back, the table gets moved out, and all of a sudden you're out into the walkway. So it just makes people very vulnerable trying to get up and down the streets. And that's not only people with disabilities, but it's older people, it's parents with buggies. It actually impacts everybody.
Now, you pointed out that people with disabilities are customers too, and they might like to enjoy outdoor dining, but that disabled parking space they used to be able to access is now covered in tables and chairs.
Yeah, there's a couple of different issues there. One, the spaces are covered in tables and chairs, and the parking spaces have been removed to other areas, which are not necessarily as accessible as the original space was. And in some cases, there isn't a dished curb, or there might be bollards in the way. But just as a for instance, some of the parking spaces in Dublin were moved to Fishamble Street. So now Fishamble Street have five what is supposedly wheelchair accessible parking spaces. But in actual fact, if anybody knows Fishamble Street, it's a very steep, it's a very steep hill. Mm-hmm. And to actually park and try and get out of your car as a wheelchair user is almost impossible. Yeah. So they're not really accessible at all. Mm-hmm. And they've moved them away from where people are very used to use them and use them for a specific reason to get to somewhere that's close to
okay.
them.
So you're not against the principle of what we're doing, but the practicalities are what you are concerned about, John. So if you take that on, Richard, the question is, can the people in hospitality, you know, order themselves in such a way to be conscious of the people with wheelchairs, buggies and so on that need to get by?
Absolutely. I'm a firm believer where there's a will, there's a way. And actually, before the pandemic, we were actually advocating that, you know, there would be good quality windbreakers to delineate space that would be used by hospitality businesses, for example. I think the point that Joan made as well, we've got a lot of support from businesses, particularly for evening pedestrianisation when it's most important for the hospitality businesses. I think there's certainly scope in that. And I think, you know, we've got 6 months now with the extension of 6 months. So I think there's a real opportunity for us in all of our towns and cities, working with business groups, working with, for example, Purple Flag groups, which is about, you know, promoting the evening and nighttime economy, to have the dialogue about how we manage the city so that it's a better space for all. And Joan is right. You know, the people with mobility or visual impairment issues are customers and they're citizens, and, okay. and they need to be taken into account.
You're saying you come at this with very goodwill towards people with disabilities. Joan has outlined the difficulties. What needs to happen? I mean, who needs to talk to whom?
I think it's obviously something that's going to be led by the local authorities. Obviously, there's a role for national government in that. But there are, within about 20 towns, Purple Flag groups that look at the evening and nighttime economy, and they include local authorities, businesses, Gardaí, etc. So I think they're a very good vehicle for promoting the dialogue that needs to take place. But I think, you know, we certainly can do it. And certainly in Dublin, you know, I take the point that some streets are more adept at being, you know, having outdoor dining. But the others as well, I think there is scope for, you know, as I say, having delineated spaces, a good quality furniture, creating a better ambience. And I do think an important point in this as well is that outdoor dining improves the perceptions of safety. There are people, there are eyes and ears in the street. You know, it does enhance that overall feeling of well-being for people. And I think that's important too.
Well, let's hope that when it happens in a more regularised form now, that we'll develop our own protocols that make it safe and enjoyable for everybody. My thanks to Richard Guiney, Chief Executive of Dublin Town, and to Joan Carthy, Advocacy Manager with the Irish Wheelchair Association. Colleen Rooney has accused Rebecca Vardy and her agent of sending evil messages about her. The so-called Wagatha Christie trial heard that Vardy and her agent allegedly monitored and stalked Colleen Rooney, the wife of former England footballer Wayne Rooney. And Rebecca Vardy is suing Colleen Rooney for defamation after Colleen Rooney alleged that stories about her had been leaked from Vardy's Instagram account. Now, for the latest on this drama, we're joined by Melanie Finn, entertainment correspondent and news reporter with the Irish Independent. Melanie, good morning.
Hi, Pat. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. You were monitoring all of this yesterday and again this morning. What's going on? What's been said?
Right. So the big news today is that Jamie Vardy has finally made an appearance in court with his wife, Rebecca. It had been noted that he hadn't accompanied her to any of the previous day's sittings. So he arrived today in this huge show of public unity, holding her hand, because today, very compellingly, we're going to hear evidence from Wayne Rooney. So this is obviously his former England teammate. And I believe the two of them are sitting very close in court with their wives. And it looks like the world's most awkward wedding. That's how it's been described. Not looking or obviously talking or interacting with each other in any way, shape or form. So the last 2 days of evidence, we have heard from Colleen Rooney herself. And she really has been a very credible, very believable witness in this libel trial with about, you know, it's £3 million sterling. It's going to end up costing at least, I would say. And it's also going to cause a lot of damage. So it really is, I mean, it's become the most compelling trial, you know, in recent years. People are just absolutely lapping this up.
Now, there is a touch of, you know, the missing witness about Rebecca Vardy's agent, Caroline Watt. And she is not going to testify. And yet she's, you know, the ghost of the feast.
Yeah, that's right. And very crucially, her phone, she said, ended up in the North Sea. So this would have been used, of course, to get evidence of messages between herself and Miss Vardy, crucially relating to the Instagram posts. Now, they do have some WhatsApp messages. They have recovered those. And it was clear that they were discussing Colleen Rooney's life, her private Instagram posts in some detail, but she has declined to give evidence, which is kind of crucial. So it is a bit like the elephant in the room. I mean, many people are questioning, why did Rebecca Vardy go ahead with this trial in the first place? Because she's not covering herself in glory. She was very tearful. She was very emotional during her own evidence last week, and she's not doing her own reputation any favours. She's coming across as very attention-seeking, kind of obsessed with Colleen Rooney, who would have been on the upper echelons of the so-called WAG scale, being married to Wayne Rooney, of course. So people are really questioning, like, who advised her to take this case? It's going to end up costing her a lot more than £3 million if she loses. And of course, it's still ongoing. We don't know how it's going to end up. But just from an outside perspective, it's not coming across good for her.
Yeah. Colleen Rooney alleged that they were sending evil posts about her.
Yes, they were. They were definitely discussing her. And she said, you know, in her own evidence that she found it particularly upsetting that they referenced her late sister, Rosie. Rosie had additional needs and she died in 2014. And she said that was just the most disgusting thing to come out of this, you know, that they would even bring her into this domain of negativity. You know, they were discussing a car crash where she totaled a Honda. You know, there was various expletive-filled messages relating to Colleen. It was clear that she had a gripe against her. I mean, I don't know if I'd call it a vendetta, but she certainly disliked her. You know, that's coming across very clearly. And like Colleen herself, she said, I never did anything to either of them. I don't know why they embarked on this so-called campaign against her.
And is there any conclusion that you can draw as to why they would have such a set against Colleen Rooney? I mean, is it pure envy?
Yeah, that's really the million-dollar question. What's going on here, Pat? What's motivating Rebecca Vardy, a woman who on the outside appears to have everything? You know, the perfect lifestyle, 5 kids, a handsome husband, multi-million, you know, pound bank account to splash on these designer outfits. It must be something like that, you know, to a woman who has everything. And then she looks at Colleen Rooney and thinks, oh, I want the notoriety that she has. I want the fame that she has. I want to be the number one wag. I beg his belief why you would do this to yourself, why you would have your own life dragged through the courts, you know, when you have initiated this. Because most people, if you remember, Pat, had kind of forgotten about Colleen Rooney's post back in October 2019. I remember I was in the newsroom in the Indo at the time when it so-called dropped and everyone was just, you know, instantly engaged, rapt attention, it went viral. So really, if Rebecca hadn't taken this action, it would have been water under the bridge, yesterday's newspaper. Yeah. So you would have to question what she possibly thinks she could gain from this. She is just losing every single day that this continues. It's hard to believe that it's only been going on since last Tuesday. And it's only due to last a week. So it's kind of coming into the closing stages now.
Yeah, I remember when that thing dropped from Colleen Rooney, thinking what a smart woman she was exclude everybody else and put these stories up that were for one person's eyes only, Rebecca Vardy's eyes. And therefore, she had proof positive, as she said herself, that these leaks to the Sun came from Rebecca Vardy's account. Now, as far as I remember, she didn't actually say from Rebecca Vardy at the time. She just said her account, which is obviously true. Now, who had eyes on the account might be a nitpicking legal argument. But I think she demonstrated very ably that that's where the leaks came from.
It was very smart because she left it open to it being either Rebecca Vardy or someone in her inner circle, such as her agent at the time. And I really think, like, she's reclaiming her narrative, you know, as a so-called wag, a term that she hates. She hates the term Wagatha Christie. She said that also yesterday. She said she's hated every minute of this, of going through this. But actually, she's redeeming herself very well. She comes across as articulate, as thoughtful. She patiently explained to, you know, the senior counsel the other day the difference between Instagram stories and Instagram posts, you know, which is something you wouldn't think you would have to explain to someone in the middle of a trial that's kind of hinging on a lot of social media posts. But there you go. And she did it with dignity and grace. And I think she's coming across very well. And she is, you know, there's a lot of snobbery towards these women sometimes, you know, and I think she's reclaiming her own narrative and saying, no, actually, I'm standing up for myself. Someone was deliberately leaking fake and vicious stories about me, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Melanie, thank you very much for joining us. Melanie Finn, entertainment correspondent and news reporter with The Irish Independent.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.